Good morning. Welcome to this episode of the Ad Drop Podcast. There are a few times when you talk to or you read about a coach where players from all points of his career say similar and extremely distinguished things. My guest is such coach. He is the head baseball coach at Oregon, Mark Wasikowski. Good morning, coach. How are you?
Hey, Terrence. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Now, we're just going to jump right into it. Your philosophy from one of your players have said, when you hit, when you win, when you hit, you win. When you don't hit, you still win. Pretty much explain that and explain how you managed to develop that thought.
That's a philosophy that I stole from Andy Lopez, who, you know, I got a chance to be around for 17 years of my life as a player and a coach, and still consider him to this day as the most impactful person that I've been around in baseball and pretty much in life as well, second to my father. You know, he's that important to me in my life. And he used to have that saying for us all. And it was more than a saying: if you hit, you win. If you don't hit, you still win. Meaning, it's not all about hitting. What can you do to be able to help the team win in another way? You know, whether it's bases properly, you're playing great defense, or, you know, throwing up zeros on the board as a pitcher. There's just so many ways in baseball that you can help your team win, even outside of just, you know, swinging a bat and hitting 3-run home runs and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, a lot of times when you hit your best, you still may lose from time to time if you don't do the other things well. And so really the hitting piece of baseball can be the focal point a lot of times for fans, and it might not be the best indicator for success.
Now, when did you know that you'd want to spend your life around the game of baseball? At what point did you say, you know what, I can do this?
Well, I really didn't know that at all. My plan was to be on Wall Street. I was trying to get a master's degree in business to where I could go. I wanted to just trade stocks and bonds and get into that rat race. That was of interest to me when I was coming out of college and in college. That was kind of my plan after baseball. And it changed in a strange way, just kind of how fate and luck would have it. I got a phone call one day. As a matter of fact, I'll never forget it. You know, I was in the shower. I was an assistant coach at a high school, Los Alamos High School, working for John Bryant. And I got a call one day and I took it, and it was Don Sneddon, who actually just got inducted in the ABCA Hall of Fame for being an all-time winningest junior college coach in the state of California. But Coach Sneddon asked me, he said, you know, hey, Waz, I know you're working there for JB at Los Al. Would you be interested in getting into Division I baseball? There's a guy out in the middle of nowhere that has a spot that contacted me, and I'll let him know. And I said, absolutely. 5 minutes later, my phone rang again, and it was this coach named Mark Hogan at Southeast Missouri State, who offered me a position as a graduate assistant coach. And it was basically, I'll pay for your education if you come out here and help us coach. And so I did. At that time, you know, there was only one paid assistant on staff, and then I was technically the second assistant. So I'd have been in the second paid slot, even though I was titled a graduate assistant, basically a graduate assistantship deal. And so I got an oil change. I got in my car and I drove out to the middle of the country. And, it was one of the greatest blessings ever, because I was there for 2 years. And the second year as a team, we got a chance to play in that institution's first regional appearance ever in the history of school. And then the best part about it was I got a chance to meet, you know, Lori Kreitz at the time, who ended up becoming my wife. So it ended up being a great decision.
Probably the best decision you ever made, coach.
No doubt.
Now, you have won a national title as a player at Pepperdine in 1982, correct?
That's correct.
Now, explain to our younger listeners who may not understand how contentious and how competitive college baseball was in the early 90s. You had Fullerton, you had Long Beach State, Pepperdine. Explain what the atmosphere like was. Like, every game was like just playoff atmosphere.
Well, baseball on the West Coast is really, really good. And it's more of a cerebral game. The wind doesn't, You know, and I've coached in all parts of the country. The wind doesn't blow out of the fields on the West Coast normally. You know, it's usually a deal, especially in the afternoon, where the marine layer will come into the West Coast schools, and the ball doesn't travel very well at night. And so you really learn a little bit more of the ins and outs of baseball and how to win a one-run game. A lot more probably you see it on the West Coast than you do in other parts of the country. And I think it's just weather-related more than anything, and people having to adapt to, hey, how are we going to win this game when my best power hitter shot is going to get caught at the warning track sometimes, you know? And on the West Coast, we see those conditions show up maybe more often than not in other spots. For us at that time, you know, yeah, we had Cal State Fullerton and Pepperdine. Dave Snow, great legendary coach, was at Long Beach State. That guy was brilliant. You know, Jerry Weinstein was coaching at Sacramento City College at that time, and he's a brilliant mind. Don Sneddon, Scott Pickler, so many guys were really, really great baseball minds on the West Coast. You know, God rest his soul, Coach Gillespie, who was at USC and UC Irvine. I mean, just so many really legendary coaches at that time that were coming through and developing their schemes. And, you know, us as young people, we just kind of jumped into more or less their world. And, you know, I mean, there'd be things that were going on, Terrence, at the time where we'd play fall league games. And one of my fonder memories is when we were playing fall league games, we'd play against community colleges, and the community colleges would give you their best shot for sure. And there would be times where you'd play, you know, a 9-inning game, but then there'd be other times where you'd play 18 innings on a Saturday or whatever, or Sunday against the scout league team or a JC, and maybe 6, 7, 8 of those innings, you'd start with runners on first and third with two outs. And, you know, one side would run all their defensive plays against an offense, and then you'd switch. And I mean, you really did learn a lot about, you know, random plays, just things in baseball, ways to expose opponents. And, you know, we were just blessed that we had all those great teachers at that time to be able to, if you just kind of paid attention a little bit, you probably absorbed quite a bit. And you know, with Coach Garrido and, you know, I mean, Coach Horton, I mean, all these guys, great, great baseball minds, all a part of that time at that time on the West Coast. It was a lot of fun to be a player at that time.
Now, to a man, and everything I've read, people have said one of your strongest character traits is the intensity, where you're able to take such intensity but channel it positively. When did you develop this intensity for the game of baseball?
Oh, I don't know. For me, Coach Lopez was an intense coach. You know, so was Coach Horton when I got a chance to work for Coach, and they did it different ways. You know, Coach Lopez was, his upbringing and background, you know, it was different. It was unique. And so was Coach Horton's. And so when Coach Lopez grew up on the docks in San Pedro, California, wasn't a super easy background where he came from. It was, you know, he was in a gang. He was a part of street fights, you know, on a regular basis and territorial things. And I mean, just so he brought that kind of mentality to the field with him. I was around him for 17 years. You know, he coached at LA Harvard Junior College. And that was the rival of Cerritos Junior College, where the great Wally Kincaid coached. And that was where the entire tree of George Horton and Bill Mosiello and Mike Kirby and Dave Serrano and all these guys now were coming through this coaching tree, more or less. Well, they were rivals, and it was mean, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like it is now where, you know, you can't bench jockey, or you can't, you know, throwing pitches high and tight or going in hard to a plate or a base and taking out a guy at second base. I mean, you know, back then it was real simple. The way you played the game and you honored your opponent was you played so hard that you would take a second baseman out on a double play. And if you didn't, your own teammates, when you came back to the dugout, would just let you have it. And so there was a respect in a strange way. Now it's viewed, I guess, as Bush League, or you could end somebody's career and all these other things. Well, back then it wasn't that way at all. It was the opposite. It was. If you were running from first to second and there was a ground ball hit on the infield and you did not try to take out that middle infielder on a double play, that middle infielder would lose respect for you as a player and a competitor, as would your own bench and dugout. And so you'd be kind of ostracized in a way. You know, it just wasn't viewed as a negative play. It was viewed as that's the way you were taught to play baseball. And so at that time, it really has changed, yes. But a lot of the intensity that I think I bring to the field, it's been altered for the generation that we get a chance to coach now. Just like every generation is going to, you got to be able to adapt, I think, in this profession. But still, yeah, the intensity I'm bringing is probably just a product of the people that I was around and their desires to teach competitors and win baseball games. And so that's just the way we were taught. And it was taught in different ways by Coach Horton and Coach Lopez specifically. But the common denominator was ultimate competitor, and it was fierce competitor, and it was walk off the field with everything you had and blood, sweat, and tears and get off that field. And the objective was to win the game. And if you played your hardest, then the guy on the other side would respect you. And if you didn't and you saved something against those people, you would not be respected by the other side at that point in time. And so that mutual respect of just playing hard and being the ultimate competitor was really refreshing, I think, I look back on it.
Explain to the people who may not have played what it's like being a middle infielder and having to stay on the barrel of knowing that you're going to get hit. It's kind of akin to being a quarterback sitting in the pocket and knowing you're going to take a pop, but you have to stand there and deliver the ball. What is that feeling like when you know you have somebody barreling towards you?
Well, at the time, it was a feeling of I better learn some techniques of how to, get away from a runner that was going to come in and slide hard. And so I credit Tony Muser Sr., who, I got a chance to play with his son. He was a year older than I was in high school, Los Alamitos High School. But, Tony Muser Sr. was around all the time, and he taught us at the high school level of, hey, this is how you need to get out of the way of a guy sliding into second base. And it was just taught, you released that pivot and you got up in the air. And as your feet were up in the ground, you were going to get hit and you were going to go over the top of the runner. But if your feet were in the air, then that would provide you the protection for your knees and ankles. And so you just learn these techniques. And Mr. Muse was the guy that taught us those things. He was awesome. Lucky to have, not everybody has a guy that's a legendary, major league player and a manager at the big league level and a hitting coach for all the years that he is in pro ball, at their disposal when they're 16, 17, 18 years old, like we did. But that's where we learned it. And it was just techniques, and you just learned it. And that's who was in my life teaching us that kind of stuff. It was kind of fun.
When we come back from break, I want to get into your philosophy on building a team and discuss a couple of your players individually. But that's after break. You're listening to the AdDrop podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with AdDrop podcast. Terrence Biggs, Mark Wasikowski, who is the head baseball coach at Oregon. Coach, you have a reputation for being a builder of programs. When you look at a program when you first start, what's the one thing that you try to, not change, but try to get into focus first?
Well, that's pretty broad, Terrence. My opinion, I don't know if this is right or not, but the first thing that I've done is try to just look at the program. This is now your culture. You're going to establish a culture of the program you want. And so what's that look like? And you need to define that.
Go ahead.
For me, that includes an awful lot, to be honest with you, but making sure that those guys in that locker room understand that, like I'm the outsider coming into it, right? And so when you get hired at a new program, you're the outsider walking into a world where people are usually fairly comfortable being around each other. And their antennas and guard are up on you probably more than anything. And so, it's the development of trust. It's the clarity of purpose. It's the understanding that it's a togetherness that we're going to accomplish whatever we accomplish by. But really, it does come down to the clarity of the purpose at hand, and then making sure that your players and your staff members are clearly aligned on what that looks like. And then the process is what we talk about, but the process of being accountable and the other pieces that are in that process is really critical.
One of the highest compliments that was paid to you, I'm going to read you this quote. He is definitely deserving. You cannot have hired a better person to be the next Duck up. He knows what it takes to take the Ducks to the next level and get us to Omaha and hopefully bring home a national championship. In terms of Waz as a person, he's a family guy and he cares about every guy who has played for him. A good example is, even though I did not get to see him, he was at my start at Wrigley because he was recruiting the area. He and his wife made it out to Chicago and got to see me pitch. We shared a few texts and laughed at the fact that he was there to see my first major league hit. He is first class and always takes care of his guys. He expects nothing less than the highest bar set. Cole Irvin now pitches with the Oakland A's. When you set an expectation for a player, how soon do they know when you have a young player coming in that this is what you expect and this is what needs to happen?
Kind words, and I'm sure not every player that's been around has those kind of words. I wish that was the case. And Cole was a special talent, and he's just now got picked up by the Orioles, which is great. I spoke with him this morning, and he's been blessed, which is fantastic. For us, I don't know. I think, expectations of players, I think, again, need to be defined. It would be real easy to have expectations of players in terms of statistical measures, and I just don't know that that's fair. One thing that we define in terms of the expectations is well, when you look at that mirror, I got this from Brian Kane, who works with our athletes as a mental skills coach, and Brian, I thought he put it out there real well when he talked about the person in the mirror. Can you answer to that person in the mirror every day? And as a person, I can honestly tell you, I haven't been able to in my life every single day. And I'm still working to be able to answer that person in the mirror every single day. Did I do my best? Did I do my best for my family? Did I do my best for my players that day? Can I look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day and honestly assess an answer to that person in that mirror? I think that's huge. And whatever that person in that mirror has inside of that person at their best is really the expectation we're looking for and nothing else. So for us, just to try to encourage our young people and our staff or anybody in our organization, we're all the same. One is, I think we have to admit that probably none of us are all that great. We all have clear weaknesses in our game. I think admitting that's hard. It's been really hard for me in my life to admit some of those things. And yet, I think we all have to address that and say to ourselves, boy, I'm not all that fantastic. And everybody's dealing with some struggles. And I think that's where we can connect with people the best these days is really kind of admitting that on our own and saying, look, nobody's standing here preaching at you or something like that. This really comes to a togetherness of how are we going to accomplish this together? And there's pieces that we all can provide that are going to be of value. And we're all coming from a place where we need each other too. So just kind of being a little bit vulnerable, I guess, is what I'm saying, Terrence, with that. But also being transparent to where at the end of the day, you're able to answer to the person in the mirror, I think is critical.
Now, I want to discuss three of your players. One is Terrence Smith. It seems as though throughout his career, he has developed a little more power. He seems, from the time he first stepped on campus, to be a little stronger. Are you surprised at how he has managed to transform his game into an excellent player?
Not surprised at all. It just comes from, if a player comes into what we have at the University of Oregon with the desire, that's all he needs. Because with my coaching staff, Jack Martyr, Jake Angier, Brett Thomas, Marcus Hinkle, and down in the weight room, Daryl Hunter, who's strictly a strength coach for baseball. He doesn't work with other sports. These guys are awesome. These guys are the guys that if there's an athlete that comes in who has ability, which Tanner clearly does, but if he comes in and he has ability and then he has the desire to improve that ability, this coaching staff I have, it's my number one objective with my administration is to keep them together. And it's been a challenge because their greatness has had offers from others. And to keep our staff together has been really critical for our success here, the development of Tanner or anybody else in that locker room. If they're bringing that desire and in with them, I know there's going to be talented players here because the recruiting efforts that Jack Martyr and these guys, Jake, have done, there's going to be talent if there's desire that's meshed with their coaching abilities, that's where I see the development. It's not a surprise at all that Tanner Smith and others have really developed as well as they have. And physically, Tanner looks great. Most players that come in offensively come in at one level and then end up really adding power as the years go. And that's a measure of a lot of things, but it's strength. It's the awesome job that, that Brett Thomas does, getting the analytics to our hitting coach, Jack Martyr, to where he can get a plan together with Brett to implement for each athlete's development. And that usually includes power. And so doesn't surprise me at all that Tanner, with his desire and his motivation, has really developed like he has. And boy, he looks like he's ready for a tremendous year.
Jacob Hughes, big frame, live arm. What's his ceiling, do you think?
Ceiling's always determined by the player, you know, and there's no limit to that. What the limits that people put on people's ceilings are false and need to be broken down. You know, there's never something that a player can't accomplish and can't do. There's too many stories of guys like Michael Jordan, who I guess were cut from high school teams, that do what they did. This fallacy of there's a ceiling that's put over your head and we're got to try to reach the ceiling. Well, I don't know what the ceiling is for anybody, whether it's Jacob Hughes or whether it's anybody else. You know, experiences and upbringing can put those thoughts, those negative, and we call them negative thoughts in a person's mind, because sometimes they come from an environment that tells them you can't do this, you can't do that. Maybe it's a tougher upbringing where the odds may be stacked against that person. Those are real things. Well, what else is a real thing is yeah, they may be stacked against you, but you can still win and you can still accomplish whatever is in front of you. And I understand that maybe everybody isn't on the same playing field, the same level playing field at the beginning. And that has nothing to do with where we can go with our potential and where that cap is. That has no bearing whatsoever. It could be a starting point. Somebody could be ahead of somebody else as a starting point. But well, we see that all the time, especially when the early commitment era that we're in right now with the kids that commit to schools earlier. And then all of a sudden, this kid that doesn't commit earlier, but yet he passes the kid that got opportunities before he did. And now all of a sudden, this player that didn't get opportunities early is now past people that were highly sought after and ranked early in their amateur careers. And yet they're being passed left and right at the collegiate professional level. It goes through every sport. Tom Brady just retired yesterday. Same kind of thing with him. Wasn't even a starter at Michigan. And yet as great as he ended up being in professional football, how does that happen? People would have told him at the time, well, this is your limit, Mr. Brady. And he didn't believe any of that stuff. He took his diet, his exercise, his training to an entirely different level, and the rest now is history. And so I think that can be said for Jacob Hughes or any athlete that comes into our world. If a coach puts a limit on you, boy, shame on that coach and that coaching staff. And if a player does that to himself, that's the job of us to be able to break that down and say, you're not being fair to yourself. How do you know that there's limits that you're setting? And why would we set something? You can set goals, yes, but limits, no.
Now, the last one I want to talk about is Jacob Walsh, first baseman. He was a freshman All-American power. What should people look at for, or what should people expect? Not suspect, but what do you think Jacob brings to the table?
He's an amazing kid. As a human being, this guy's awesome. Like, what a person, first and foremost. What can people expect out of Jacob? That he's going to give you everything he's got every single day that he shows up to the ballpark. What can they expect out of him? That he's got weaknesses too, inside of himself as a man and inside of his game. And yet every day he's trying to improve those weaknesses and continue to improve his strengths. Those are the things that I would think you can expect out of Jacob. Jacob is a tremendous person. His family have brought him up so well, and we're blessed to have him every single day in our program to get a chance to impact him in a positive way.
The Ducks start the season playing four games versus Xavier at home, February 17th, two on the 18th, and one on the 19th. Head coach Mark Wasikowski. Coach, thank you so much for joining us on the Under Helmet podcast.
Thank you so much, Terrence. Honored to be with you. Go Ducks.